Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
What are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless at taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box People. My name is Tom Strange, and with me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid, plus a new friend. First, we're going to go over to Tommy. Tommy, what are you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing fine. I am drinking some Glenmorangie Scotch tonight. How are you doing, Tommy? What are you drinking?
I am drinking a straight Jack Daniels tonight because I'm in a good mood and I like Jack Daniels. Scotch, whiskey, whiskey, whiskey. Delicious. Josh, I saw you bring two beers in with you. Were they the same kind?
Yeah, I'm drinking the Harpoon Rec League, the light beer tonight. I don't know what's going on with my leg. I'm hoping it doesn't fall off. So I figured I would... I would go easy tonight.
All right. Tommy, yes, you. Mikey. Mikey, what are you drinking up in that in your sequestered hole?
Well, because 2020 has been such a shitty year, I've decided to go whole hog into it. I am drinking a Corona hard seltzer. It's a blackberry lime, and I got to say, surprisingly, it's really fucking tasty.
All right, then. That is surprising.
It is. The only person. I'm going to fucking start pounding these now.
Pound those things in there, and they're low in carbs. Got to keep those carbs down.
True.
And our new friend, Sasha Kaplan. Sasha's coming to us today, and hopefully in other podcasts in the future. But today, she's specifically here to talk about Jewish characters. First, though, how are you doing, and what are you drinking? Please don't say Manischewitz. It's too...
Oh, God,
it's too on the nose.
No self-respecting Jew actually drinks Manischewitz socially. I am drinking a nice bottle of red wine. It's a Pennsylvania-based winery, and they have really nice sweet dessert wines, and I like sweet wines, so that is what I'm drinking, and I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited to be here.
That's terrific. Was it an expensive bottle?
To be honest, I don't know.
Point of order. She's in grad school. Everything is fucking expensive.
I was about to say, you're in grad school. Everything's too damn expensive.
I work full-time, too. So.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
I have no life.
Money. So today we're going to be talking about Jewish characters in comic books. We're not really going to be talking about Jewish influence in comic books, except tangentially, because if we start going into writers and artists, that's like three more episodes, and they'd be three great episodes, but today we want to talk about characters. So we're going to do this as we usually do when we're talking about characters, kind of a round robin style, and just talk about some of our favorite characters, where they appear. If someone else jumps on your character, you drink, and when they're done, you get to jump in and say a little bit about why you like that character too. I know we have a lot of crossovers already because we've already been chitting and chatting. I'm going to let Mikey go first. Mikey, who's your fave?
Well, I'm going to go with Zatanna. She...
I did not know Zatanna was of the Jewish faith.
They never actually defined what her faith was until DC Bombshells, when they announced that she was half Jewish and half Romani. So, and I've always loved Zatanna. So I'm going to drink to myself.
Sasha, you went nuts when he said that. Is there a reason?
So Zatanna, it's kind of one of those things where like DC's Bombshells is a separate universe where like everybody's pretty much expected to be Jewish or Romani unless stated otherwise. because the comic itself takes place in a World War II universe. So everybody's pretty much Jewish in it, unless stated otherwise. Even Raven, I think, has some like Romani heritage in there. You also have, like, instead of Mary Marvel, they did Miriam Marvel, which is like an incredible, like, just the entire two issues or three issues that she's in is like amazing. You have, of course. Anyway, we can go keep going later.
No, I agree with you. DC Bombshells is so entertaining. If you've got
so good
Comixology, or if you've got the DC Universe app, just go check it out. It's again an Elseworld story, but I will suspect her heritage will be brought into mainstream DC Comics at some point by somebody.
I hope so.
And Josh kind of lit up a little bit when you said Romani, because Josh is in charge of our Romani section where we talk about terrible, 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 terrible stereotypes in comic books. And we might do that in an upcoming one. But today we're still talking about our good friends of the Hebrew faith. Sasha, what is your favorite?
So my favorite character is Billy Kaplan, which is also why my last name is Kaplan. It's my pen name. Billy is actually the son of the Scarlet Witch and Vision. Do not try to explain the biology of that. You will be here all day and all night.
Good friends over. What's the other podcast where they talk a lot about sex robots?
Who'snextgaming.com.
Who's Next Game? They're obsessed with sex robots, so maybe they can explain, but go ahead.
So here it's more magic than anything else. But anyway, Billy ends up being adopted. Him and his twin Tommy get adopted separately, and Billy ends up with the Kaplans, Jeff and Rebecca, who are Jewish parents, and he grows up Jewish and thinking that these are his biological parents and everything. And he also recently, minor spoiler alert for Empire, he just got married to his husband, who is the son of Captain Marvel. So Billy's just this, like, lovely, snarky Jewish kid who from the moment he started talking on panel way back in 2005, I was like, this kid is amazing.
And by the way, when you give up a spoiler on this podcast, you have to do it in the voice of the spoiler, which goes like this. Spoiler!
Yeah, my voice is too high for that.
Spoiler! Gabe Kaplan is actually... Josh, I know you got one for this one. Come on, buddy.
Oh, yeah. I think this is all... I think we're all about to drink. My absolute favorite, of course, is Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde. Everyone drink.
Who?
Who? Shadow Cat from the X-Men. She goes way, way back to the Wayback Machine. They have passed her and let her sort of sit on the sidelines for a long time, even though she was a very popular character. It really wasn't until recently that they let her get her get her groove on and sort of take over the X-Men in a way that she was never able to. But I loved her old storylines. I loved her relationship with Wolverine back in the day. I really just – the character is just a fantastic character. They've done a lot with her. And one of the characters you see actual growth in as she gets to sort of push her way into the expanded X-Men universe. Shadowcat, amazing.
Amazing. Now, Sasha and I, we both talked about this a little bit beforehand. We both drank. My favorite part of when it became, forefront that she was Jewish was in a Dracula special. Do you remember that one, Sasha?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the Dracula's attacking all the X-Men, and Kitty Pryde holds up a cross, and Dracula looks at her like, Jewish? You have no faith in that. And he slaps it away, grabs her by the throat, accidentally grabbing her Star of David necklace, and his hand comes away horribly burned. I'm like, all right. I thought that was terrific. I loved how they, I just love that bit. That was great for me. Sasha, what was one of your faves for that?
So with Kitty, there's a lot of really amazing moments. One of my favorites is actually more recent in All New X-Men, is when she's on a plane talking to, like, the younger, older X-Men, don't question it. Havoc basically gave some kind of press conference about how he doesn't want to be seen as a mutant. He wants to be seen as a superhero. And Kitty gives the speech about how, like, she's a Jewish and a mutant. Like, she can't change her DNA. And, like, this is a part of her. And I think that's, like, the most prolific, Jewishly well-written thing that I have seen in comics. I don't think I've seen anything quite like that level since then, at least from Marvel.
That was a good one. I also love Guess What Came Down the Chimney. It had nothing to do with her being Jewish. It was just a great comic book.
There's also a really great scene in, I can't remember what comic, but she is actually lighting a candle and saying a prayer in memory of Colossus, who is dead at the time. So she's one of those characters who is, I would argue, one of the most visibly Jewish, one of the most, if not the most visibly Jewish character in comics, and one of the most well-written in terms of that Jewishness.
And speaking of just being Jewish in comics, 2 years ago they had the great Marvel Christmas special came out. And this year, finally, the all-Jewish comic was in there, where all the Jewish superheroes were getting together just to have Chinese food and chat, and it was really funny. And they couldn't find any other superheroes, so they had to stop a crime on the way to go get Chinese food, which is really funny. And it was Kitty Pryde and Sabra and Ben Graham and a bunch of others. And it was just really funny. They were all at this Chinese restaurant in New York. It's a great little scene. Tommy. Oh, sorry, Mikey.
I want to go back to the all-new X-Men, where she is the mentor for the old-slash-young first class of the X-Men. Because in that, she has actually a speech that I've saved on my iPad, where she's talking to the students, and she tells a story, and I'm going to just read it. I'm not going to do her voice, though. I'm Jewish. I assume it's Southern. I'm Jewish. I don't have quote-unquote Jewish-sounding name. I don't look or sound Jewish, whatever that looks or sounds like. So I didn't know I was Jewish. You might not know. So if you didn't know I was Jewish, you might not know unless I told you. Same goes for my mutation. I don't have to wear a visor or have blue all over me. I can walk around just a young woman in the world, but I'm not. When I was 13, before my mutation kicked in, I was in love with this boy at school, in love, and I followed him around like a puppy dog because I was an idiotic 13-year-old girl, and one day he saw a rabbi walking across the street and made the worst anti-Semitic comment ever. I won't even repeat it. He just said that awful thing and laughed, and my heart sank, and then my blood boiled. I turned to him and growled, "I'm Jewish." And he just stared at me like he didn't even realize he had said something wrong, or he didn't know how to compute what I just said. But when I got home afterwards, I was done crying my eyes out, my first heartbreak, I realized I was, for the first time ever, really proud of myself. I'm Jewish, I'm a mutant, and I want people to know who I am and what I am. I tell people because, hey, if we're going to have a problem with it, I'd like you to know.
Noise. It's a great speech.
Yeah, it's a great speech.
Yeah. Good for Brian Michael Bendis for writing it.
All right. Brian, we owe you, I think we owe him money.
Well, yeah, drink at least.
At least a beer, yeah.
At least a beer. Tommy, we haven't gotten to a little classy Manischewitz. Tommy, we haven't gotten to you.
This is probably on everybody's list since it's, you know, a very popular Marvel character. Dominic Fortune.
Yeah, Dominic Fortune is not at the top of my list, asshole, but I do remember him being Jewish.
Wow, I was totally about to drink. You had me fooled. You swerved at the last minute.
Dominic Fortune, of course, created by Howard Chaykin back in the 70s, modeled after the Scorpion from Atlas Comics. He's a 1930s adventurer-type character, and I've just always loved the character, and he's just always really kind of been out there and not afraid of his Jewishness. Howard Chaykin wrote a really great storyline where he fought off Nazis trying to infiltrate America during World War II and trying to kind of destroy America's ability to join the war. And it was a really great story. I think it was in 2006. But he's always been a great sort of bit character in the Marvel Universe.
I know he with Dominic Fortune. I kind of like the guy. Mikey, what do you got next, buddy?
Next, I'm going to the Super Friends. In the Super Friends comic, they introduced the Global Guardians, and at one point they had a three-issue crossover where they had to go around and defuse a bunch of bombs, and they paired up with the Global Guardians, and the Global Guardian from Israel was Seraph, who has the strength of Samson, the ring of Solomon, the staff of Moses, and the mantle of Elijah. And he actually, I viewed him as the Israeli Superman when I was a kid. I was like, oh, all right, this is just the Israeli version of Superman. That makes perfect sense to me. It didn't even occur to me that he wasn't really a comic book character. They had just made him for the Super Friends. So I was excited later on when the Global Guardians actually started to appear, and he does take over the Global Guardians. And then later on in his comic book career, ends up leading a version of the Suicide Squad for Mossad. But it's not, it's a long story. I'll talk about that in a little bit.
Oh, I that's a little prelude to another segment.
It's a spoiler!
Spoiler! I put the Global Guardians in a little file that I call Nice Try Asshole. That's when people are trying to be inclusive, but they kind of miss the mark.
What are you talking about?
Always.
Fire and Ice came from the Global Guardians.
Yep,
Godiva.
Yeah.
She had hair. That was prehensile. She teamed with Elongated Man. Don't ruin my fucking childhood.
just some of those characters were very one-dimensional and not very well written. But they were trying to be inclusive, so that's why I call it Nice Try, Assholes. At least they were trying. Sasha, give us another one.
All right. Kind of going the theme that Michael established, I'm going to go with Sabra.
Boom, boom, boom. We love Sabra.
Sabra, a.k.a. Ruth Betzeroff, is a fabulous character. She's an Israeli superhero, and she has such an interesting history. Like, I think there's even a comic at one point where she is, like, on guard duty for, like, Shimon Peres or somebody, and this is like back in like the 80s.
I think it's a Marvel 2-in-1. I think it's a Marvel 2-in-1, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah. So she's been through some like costume changes, but she's an Israeli superhero who is a mutant and who is kind of the first of Mossad's like super soldier style like superheroes. And there's a few comics where she like, you know, fights with the X-Men, and her first real appearance, she actually meets Bruce Banner and then fights the Hulk. I think it was the Hulk, but on the streets of what I guess was supposed to be like, I don't know what city this was to be, was supposed to be, because it didn't really look like Jerusalem, but it didn't really look like the rest of Israel either. So it's kind of like, it's just not how Israel looks, which is kind of funny.
That's what some people think Israel looks like, Sasha. You're not.
That's true, but like, it's not. So,
we here know that, but explain to our listeners why it's not, because this is important, actually. I mean, that preconceived notion of what Israel looks like to artists sometimes does not make it through to what Israel really looks like.
Honestly, Israel is like any like Western nation. You know, it has older cities. It has newer cities. Like, you know, you can't really like compare Tel Aviv and like Jerusalem. But Jerusalem also has, you have like the newer parts of the city with like big buildings. And Tel Aviv is just basically like a metropolitan city, like anywhere else you'd go, like London, New York, San Francisco, whatever. It's just a pretty Western country, like. It's not just desert and like clay buildings.
What?
I know, right?
So I believe it was originally supposed to be. This is, we're talking about Contest of the Champions.
Oh,
right?
you screwed up my Fun Alex fact. But you're right. It was Contest.
This was originally supposed to be a homage to the 1980 Olympics. But because of the Soviet boycott or the U.S. boycott because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, it didn't happen. So they were like, fuck it, we'll release it as our own. We'll figure out the own story. There's at one point they replaced one of the characters. I think She-Hulk was put in there afterwards because like she's flying around like, and she doesn't have the power of flight. They just kind of were like, oh, well, we already did the artwork. Just paint over her or something like that.
She's jumping.
Yeah, she's jumping. It's fine. It's a wild comic book. It is, and at its time, I was very excited about Contest of the Champions. It took me forever to find issue number 2 of the 3-issue series because Gail sold out of it. You Thomas probably fucking bought issue two, which prevented me from getting it. Yeah.
Could have come over and read it, man. We live like 15 minutes by bike away. It's not like we never made that trip before.
It's true.
We grew up as little kids together, Sasha.
I got that.
Josh, what do you guys, by the way, I love Contest of Champions too. Not only because it introduces so many different characters from so many different countries, which was kind of blowing my mind as a young kid, but it was a fun comic book. It was just fun. Josh, what do you got next?
I'm going for the cheat here. This is a total cheat. It's sliding one in under the radar. And I love Spider-Verse and I love Spider-Man, and they made Peter B. Parker Jewish. So now
yes,
there's a Jewish Spider-Man. I like to pretend it's just for me.
Is that why you kept on looking for a bagel?
Yes.
Bingo. Wow, you get a nice smear on that.
Wasn't he Spider-Man?
The Amazing Spider-Man. You can stop crime and do your taxes. The Amazing Spider-Man. Sasha, you can tell us that's wrong anytime. You want to hold up a yellow card?
I'm debating. I think this one gets a pass. It's fine. I've heard worse. It's fine. But
that
yeah,
shouldn't be the bar that you've heard worse.
Yeah, I've heard worse. Yeah.
It was an interesting detail to make this version of Peter Parker Jewish. So I kind of appreciate it. It was like one of those little sweet nods of like, yeah, there's one universe where Peter's Jewish. I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah.
I'm just
I'll take
the Spider
Yarmulke all day. I'm in. I'm 100% in.
Glad they gave us
Spider-Man. I love him.
It's a good thing they didn't make the pig Jewish.
Yeah, that's like yellow card territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let me work my way back in your good graces by saying one of my very favorites of all time, just because he kind of epitomizes, you know, being Jewish and some of the Jewish mythology just in himself, and that's Ben Grimm. Ben Grimm, one of the one of the very first acknowledged Jewish characters in Marveldom, and the way he appears as a golem speaks a lot about Jewish heritage. Now, I'm not 100% sure, and I've done just a little bit of research. When he was first in there, he didn't really look nearly as much like a golem. He looked more like a lumpy, scabby kind of guy. And that rockiness kind of shaped and morphed. Sasha, you look like you wanted to jump in there.
So I think there's a little bit of that in there. But to be honest, the way I always saw Ben Grimm is kind of like if Jack Kirby were to ever have a character that was based off of himself, this is the character that I would have pictured. Like anytime I see Ben Grimm, I'm like, oh my God, this is Jack Kirby, especially in like those earlier comics. So I guess it's just a difference of if we view clay as a hard substance or not. But yeah, no, Ben is such an amazing character. He actually got married recently.
I did not know that. Who did you marry?
Alicia.
He finally married Alicia?
So
he's been so long to put a ring on that.
Read the new Fantastic Four run. I highly recommend it. It's very, very good. And I've never said that about I don't think I've ever said that of any modern Fantastic Four comic. So
did you just say I highly recommend it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's like our catchphrase for when we can't think of anything better to say about it. You're fitting right in, Sasha.
You get to meet Aunt Petunia in the fucking comic.
Shows up? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Yep.
You
and
get to meet
they have a wedding.
Is she sweet?
And they have a wedding under a chuppah with a rabbi and everything. And it's the same rabbi that saw Ben through his quote-unquote second bar mitzvah. So, which is I thought was a nice touch.
What the hell did they use on Ben Grimm for a second bar mitzvah?
So the story is that he
not a bris, Tom.
Yeah.
Well, because it was like celebrating, I guess, like the 13 years, quote unquote, of him being the thing, as opposed to just Ben Grimm. At least that was the logic, if I remember correctly. But it was interesting because he was a character that I think, much like Jack Kirby, really struggled with like, what does it mean for me to be Jewish? And if you look at how Ben Grimm talks and if you look at how, like, he describes his childhood, it's literally a page out of the Jack Kirby biography. which is, I think, an amazing touch. So, yeah, highly, highly recommend the new Fantastic Four run. It's hilarious. I'm really enjoying it, and I don't know the last time I said that about a Fantastic Four comic, so.
All right, highly recommended. Fitting right in right off the bat. Tom, what do you got next?
I am going to keep with my Howard Chaykin theme and go with Reuben Flagg.
Nobody's drinking to your stupid things. Who the hell?
Blake almost drank.
Yeah, because I thought it was going to be Moon Knight, you fucker. Come on, man.
Of course we all think it's going to be Moon Knight. You love Moon Knight. And he's got so many personas, one has to be Jewish.
Reuben Flagg from the comic American Flag, of course, from the first comic. Was born from Alex and Rebecca Flagg, who were Jewish on Mars and came to America to be a solar ranger. It was a great comic, Tom. No, we've talked about it. It was groundbreaking. It was groundbreaking.
Those Azerbaijanis, they get around. You're saying he was on Mars?
Yeah, and one of the big plots of the story is that all of the rich people live on Mars, and all of the underclass people live on Earth and send all the resources to Mars. And everybody's kept kind of underfoot with violent videos, drugs, and such.
So modern America at its best. That's fine.
Yeah, subliminal videos and ultraviolence and drugs and such.
All right. I might give it a look, actually. That sounds actually up my alley.
And corporate greed.
Well, definitely are.
Yeah.
Milieu.
Yeah, it's a little prophetic, actually.
Mikey, what do you got next?
Next, I'm going to go with Judith the Sword of Zion.
Judith the Sword of Zion. I see, yes. Sasha making a face. I don't know this one.
So she is a member of the Hayoth, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, H-A-Y-O-T-H. It is the Mossad Suicide Squad, appearing in Suicide Squad Volume 1, issues 45 to 47, created by friend of the podcast, John Ostrander. And it's the Suicide Squad against the Israelis, Mossad version of the Suicide Squad. The thing that I thought was really cool about her when I first read this comic is not only does she have the sword that she uses, she's like a ninja, she's got throwing stars that are stars of David. And I was like, oh, that's a neat touch. But she has made several other appearances along with the other members of that group, but she was my favorite.
All right, then we're all going to do one last one going around here. Then we're going to go to honorable mentions. So, Sasha, what's your last one
before honorable mentions? It's so hard to pick. There's still so many that I absolutely love. Well, I guess I will say the one that I think needs to be said, the one that has yet to be mentioned. I'm going to go with Eric Lenscher. Because
sometimes
I have
Jewish,
to.
Sometimes exactly. Not. Sometimes Jewish.
He's Jewish.
I agree. He is. But they've there and back again to him a couple of times.
Pretty much only once, but it pretty much after Claremont took over most of the X-Men stories, it kind of cemented it. And then there was like one time they tried and it wasn't popular. And so they kind of retconned it back.
Yeah.
But Eric Lenscher is, if anybody's seen the X-Men movies like twice now, both sets of X-Men movies, you would know that, you know, Eric Lenscher is a Holocaust survivor. He is a Jewish character who his Jewishness, I think, really needs to be explored more. I think people tend to brush over it more often than not in comics, especially recently. There's a scene where in current X-Men comics, the X-Men have their own country again, which is this magical, ridiculous island of plant life called Krakoa. And they're showing like various dignitaries around from, you know, different countries. And Magneto basically drops them off in Jerusalem and basically denies anything to do with humanity in Jerusalem. And just like calls himself a god and leaves. And I'm like, I was so angry. I think if I was, you know, reading the comic physically, I probably would have thrown it across the room and burnt it. All right, maybe not burnt it, but I definitely would have thrown it across the room. But I
you don't have the strength to hook an iPad?
Yeah, your iPad thanks you for your
My tablet definitely does not deserve to be thrown across the room. It's not it's not the tablet's fault, okay? One of my favorite Magneto-esque storylines is actually in a comic that features Kitty. I think it's Uncanny X-Men 199. And it has Kitty bringing Magneto to an event in Chicago for Holocaust survivors. And in this event, she talks about, I think, her like great aunt or someone, but there's people that like come up to Eric and actually recognize him. And they're like, oh, you're the guy that saved us. And it's like such a touching moment. But also, I highly recommend the comic X-Men Magneto's Testaments, which chronicles Magneto's childhood in as, you know, from the kid that lives in Germany to a prisoner at Auschwitz and how he ultimately escapes.
All right. All good recommendations. And we've talked about a few of those before. Those are all great comics. Josh, what do you got next?
I have The Son of a Watchmaker. Born in 1929, his father sees splitting of the atom and tells his young son, John Osterman, to forego the family tradition of being a watchmaker and forces him to start studying nuclear physics. And eventually he gets stuck in a chamber and becomes Dr. Manhattan.
That's a great one. Why is that one of your top picks?
I just love The Watchmen. It's not really explored in the comic. His faith really isn't explored in the comic. It's really sort of the familial tradition there that is asked to be foregone, and so there's a breaking in passing tradition there for John Osterman to become Dr. Manhattan.
I like that one too a lot. I read the comic book and I saw the movies. I don't remember his being Jewish out there very much.
It's not.
I mean, most of the time we're lucky if we get a blink and you miss it menorah.
It's true.
Like, you think I'm joking, but I'm not. But I don't know if I personally like Dr. Manhattan as like as an example of Jewish representation.
Not as an example of Jewish representation. No, yeah. Not at all.
Josh just likes him because of his big blue penis.
Well, have you gone to Josh's blog, Big Blue Penis? Big Blue Penis.
But that is the nod, right? Because it's cut.
Yellow card, buddy.
I think the nod there is the breaking of tradition from what is... the breaking of Jewish families by that event, and the father basically telling the son that you can't stand for this anymore. You have to go and walk into the future. And it's a small nod, and it's a little familiar to me in my own family. So it's just something that resonated with me. And though no, I don't really think it's a great example of Jewish representation in comics, but I do love the comic. I do love the nod, and I love the character.
Right. I'm glad that that one was said then, because I have one that I think is a good representation of Jewish descent in comic books, and that is the one of my favorites, talking about him often, Ragman.
Yes.
There you go. Ragman says, Sasha's with me. Great character for me. I love a lot about this character. His being Jewish is part of his character. It is part of his, you know, why he takes care of the people he takes care of, why he stays in the neighborhood, why he loves the neighborhood so much. Sasha, you were quick to jump on. What do you like about Ragman?
I like the kind of backstory of the fact that, like, for a while, he didn't even know he was Jewish, and which is not unheard of. But he's just so. I like the conflict kind of between how he views society and how he is as a superhero. There's a great, I think it's from the Brave and the Bold comics, actually, where Ragman helps, I guess he loaned, you know, a rabbi or whoever it was, some money or something, and he sold him a menorah and he was going to like buy it back. and the city's like getting worse, and he's like blaming Bruce Wayne for everything. And there's an interesting kind of semi-crisis of faith that he's having, while also like realizing that, okay, Bruce Wayne or Bat— I think it was, he was hating on Batman, not Bruce Wayne. He realizes that, like, okay, Batman's not just a thug, and I'm not, you know, I'm more than I am, kind of a thing. And it's interesting how he connects, reconnects with his own faith and understanding of, the, you know, his culture, while also like, okay, Batman's not that bad.
All right. That's terrific. That's all our main ones. We got all the main ones out of the way. Everyone gets a couple. Oh, Mike, he's got a
LT. You didn't get
fuck LT. He didn't get— no, I don't want to give him another one because he kept going over Moon Knight just to infuriate me. Moon
I was going to say my last one is a horrible representation of Jewishness, but I love the character, and that would be Moon Knight.
Yay!
Well, there is one character that I think does deserve a mention before we move on, and that is Kate Kane, sure, aka Batwoman.
Yeah.
Just because
she's my honorable mention list.
Just because, like, she's such a cool character. She has an interesting backstory. She's— thanks to her, we pretty much know Batman is Jewish. So, like, thank you for that. It'll never be explored in the comics, but I can sit here with my headcanons. and especially, like, there's times where she shines really well, and it's, again, going back to Bombshells, is like, anytime she punches a Nazi, it's just like such a satisfying feeling. Like anytime. And she's also, just like Billy Kaplan, she's also representative of LGBT as well. She's a lesbian. That's explored throughout her story. And I'm glad that, like, her— it doesn't— there's often like this, I guess, disassociation between like your sexuality and religion. And I like the fact that like her Jewishness is still something that is touched upon and still prevalent. At least I hope so. I have not read a Batwoman comic in a while. I pretty much stopped when the New 52 hit. So other people can let me know.
We don't want to spoil anything for you. That's the job of the spoiler.
So that brings me to my trivia question. I was going, Batman is one of the answers, and so is Zatanna. Can you tell me two other Justice League members who are Jewish? LT?
Adam Smasher?
Adam Smasher was not part of the Justice League, Justice Society.
Ray Palmer?
I don't know if Ray Palmer is Jewish, is he? Wow, I didn't know that one. You've stumped me. I've read a lot of comics. I never ever recall them ever mentioning it.
How about Elongated Man?
Nope, Ralph is not.
All right.
Don't say Booster Gold. Please don't say Booster Gold.
I'll give you a hint.
Is it Booster Gold?
By the way, Adam Sandler as Booster Gold would be genius. Can we agree on that? Adam Sandler as Booster Gold? Are you fucking kidding me? You may all die.
No.
I think there'd be better people for it.
Now, Booster Gold, I'll Adam give you Sandler, a hint. I'm done.
He's a Green Lantern.
He's
Hal Jordan.
Hal Jordan.
Sort of. It was mentioned once and never brought up again.
Yes. In the Dark Side War Green Lantern comic, he mentions that his father was Catholic and his mother was Jewish. And after his father died, his mother sent him over to the Catholic Church to light a candle. He didn't know what the fuck he was doing because he never went to church at all.
He burned the place down by accident.
Now, it's all a reflection on the power of God. It's actually a very good story by Tom King. And then the other one is, I guess he's only half Jewish because he's two people.
Two people.
Oh, yeah, of course. Firestorm.
I had the
Firestorm
website up in front of me, so I wasn't going to spoil it. I had already
pre-keyboarded it. Yeah. So, yeah, I knew that one.
Yeah.
Dr. Stein
is definitely Jewish. And I like in The Legends of Tomorrow, they've really embraced his Jewish heritage, right? Or no? We have a disagreement.
So,
let's go on. Let's
hear it. I speak at cons about like Jewish representation, what is good and what is bad. And in some cases, like, it is good. They mentioned that he was Jewish. They have a whole thing about how his dad made him become a rabbi before he could pursue science, which is actually the same story happened with Jackie Mason, that he, like, you know, was in religious school to become a rabbi or something like that, because his dad, that was what his dad wanted him to be, and then he became a comedian afterwards. But
I was about to say, I know Jackie Mason. He's no scientist.
No. The rabbi, first you become a rabbi, then you do what you want, kind of a thing.
Okay.
But there's other times where I don't think it was handled well, in the sense that, like, when they go to, what was it, the planet X or Earth X?
Yes.
And it's this, like, planet where the Nazis reign supreme and whatnot, and there's very little processing time between, like, the two Jewish characters that are on screen. And it was just kind of, like, in some ways a missed opportunity. I would say in terms of Jewish representation in the DC Arrow Flashverse, Dr. Stein is definitely the best. But I still think there's a lot of work to be done there.
Well, I didn't like the episode where it was Saturday night, the sun was going down, and Firestorm's like, I'm out. I didn't like that one at all.
Well, Tom has a phrase, and it's called slow, shitty progress. So, yeah.
Slow, shitty progress is something I say all the time. And I know it's slow, I know it's shitty, but progress is progress, and I have seen that we have made some.
I love that he was trying to buy Beepo for Christmas present, even though he didn't celebrate Christmas because his son or his daughter really wanted it. I guess it was a son originally, then it was a daughter. I don't know. Time travel. Don't fucking watch it, Josh. You'll just get pissed.
Josh will just get mad at the whole damn thing. Yeah. All right, a couple other honorable mentions. Who's got a couple more?
I got one more.
Enjoy the honorable mention.
Friend of the podcast, Mark Russell. Second coming. Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I keep on forgetting that guy's a Jew.
Don't shake your head at me.
Sasha, did you read Second Coming?
I did not, no.
Uh-huh.
It's very interesting. It's Jesus and basically Jesus and Superman being roommates.
That's brilliant.
It's great.
I don't even know what to make of that, but I guess I will have to put it on my list. But that sounds... ridiculous.
The first issue will make you a better person having read it.
I don't know if I'm ready to be a better person.
Sure. So that's an honorable mention from him. Mike, you got an honorable mention up there?
I'm going to go with, next to Jesus, the second most powerful Jew in comicdom, and that is David Haller, Legion.
Oh, Legion, sure.
Oh, yeah. I always forget he's Jewish.
Yeah.
He does too sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes he thinks he's an alien. Yeah. He doesn't know. Any other
wasn't his mom Magneto's lawyer at one point?
Probably.
His whole origin story is shrouded in a possible rape by Charles. He even Xavier doesn't know if he used his mind control powers to make the woman fall in love with him or not, because he was still learning how to do it. You know, he would perfect it by Jean Grey.
Most of the X-Men comics is Charles Xavier. So.
It is. It's definitely Charles Xavier.
I was going over the list, and White Tiger is Jewish. I don't understand
which one.
I know, right? I mean, there's so many White Tigers. I'm like, which White Tiger are we talking about? So I did a little research, and it was like one of the original White Tiger, which doesn't make any sense to me at all, was Jewish. I just want to throw that out there. Yeah.
All
White
right.
Tiger. I would not have guessed that. That's the one that I would not have guessed at all.
So Wesley Dodds, the original Sandman, is Jewish. I saw the list of Jewish characters, and I couldn't remember. Like, I've read all of Sandman Mystery Theater. I can't remember it ever coming up.
Yeah, that one.
Does anybody know where that's mentioned or anything? Or is it just because his last name? Or
I don't remember it coming up either.
Yeah.
I think it might be one of those things where it maybe came up in later comic books as kind of a nod.
I don't know. But, I'm going to have to go
Sasha,
read it.
How about you? Do you remember the original Sandman being Jewish? I mean, we know he is because it's there, but Sasha might be having a little bit of connectivity problems at the moment, or she's frozen in space and time.
The last 48 seconds.
So we don't really know much about that one. But hopefully we can get some confirmation on that one either way. There she is. Sasha, do you remember the original Sandman actually talking about being Jewish, or is it just noted?
I don't honestly remember. I really don't. I was trying to rag on my brain before my internet cut out for a second, but nope, no clue.
Yeah, you know, I know he's Buddhist.
That was a good answer. Yeah.
I know he's Buddhist, but I didn't know he was also Jewish.
Our president doesn't believe in it, but I don't know is a fine answer. Sometimes that's the best answer you can give. I don't know, or nope, I don't know. It's okay. All right, I think that does it for Jewish characters, guys.
Yeah.
Sasha, do you want to stay for the rest of the podcast? We talk about a couple other things, or do you have to go? You're a busy
What do you guys want to plan on talking about? I probably will have to go, unfortunately, but I appreciate being invited.
Well, you're very welcome. We're just going to be talking about some really dumb stuff, and we're going to try to keep it on track. So when you listen to this later, you won't say, those bastards went blue right after I went off. So, everyone, that was Sasha Kaplan. Do you have anything to plug before we let you go?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys can find me on Twitter at Geeky Kaplan, of course, Kaplan, because of Billy Kaplan. And you can find me on my new page where I write comic book reviews and most of the time cry in a corner. And that is geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, we'll have
come back again.
Yeah. And whenever we do panels at any comic book convention, you're now automatically invited. 100%.
Good to know. Thank you, guys.
You can have LT spot.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
She was a dream. So very glad we were able to connect with her. Quick shout out to Diane. Diane is the one who turned me on to something that Sasha had written on one of the con pages. She said, take a read and maybe contact this person to be on the podcast. So, Diane, friend of the podcast, thank you very much. And that brings us up to Front of the Long Box. I think I already know what you're going to talk about, Mikey.
If you motherfuckers are not reading The Three Jokers, what the fuck is wrong with you? Holy shit, it is the Joker story of this generation. It is going to be up there with The Killing Joke as one of the best Joker stories ever. And here's the spoilers. So if you don't want to know anything about the fucking comic, stop listening for a few seconds. Maybe a few minutes while I go on a little bit of a rant. See, back on the Dark Side War, Batman sits in the Metron chair. What happens when he sits there? He goes, who is he? And he goes, of course, there are three of them. Now that answer is finally being revealed. This is not part of continuity, unfortunately, because it's Black Label. So it is a separate universe story. However, it is fucking amazing. If you view it as there's the Bronze Age Joker, I would call him the Denny O'Neill Joker with the laughing fish, the guy who's a fucking brilliant chemist. That's one of the Jokers. Then there's the I guess I would call him the Alan Moore Joker, the Killing Joke Joker, that terrifying one who fucking paralyzes Barbara Gordon, who fucking takes a tire iron to Jason Todd. That's the other one. And then the third one is the old one, the leader of the Jokers, if you will. And this guy is the most terrifying of all of them because you know he's got shit up his sleeve. The whole comic is based on the premise the Joker strikes at three different locations and Gotham PD calls in the Batman family. They're like, hey, you got to help us. We think we've got the Joker and two copycats. And Batman's like, no, they're finally fucking all together and organizing. And not to get into too much detail, but Jason Todd, hear me out. Jason Todd, the Red Hood, is the fucking Joker's bitch because Joker plays Jason Todd like a fucking fiddle. The conversation between those two in issue number one, where he's like, what do you mean you're Batman's sidekick? You're my fucking sidekick. I made you. You were nothing. I didn't even kill you because I hated you. I killed you just to fuck with Batman. But what do you do when you come back? The Red Hood? My old fucking identity? You're my fucking sidekick. You're not Batman's sidekick. Holy shit, the mind fuck that goes on. Thank you, Geoff Johns, for writing this. Everybody should be fucking reading this comic. It is awesome.
And because there was a vote, Joker didn't kill Jason Todd. We killed Jason Todd. We called in for that shit.
I only called
I spent like $8.
I only called once because like it was, yeah, my parents, once they saw that 1-900 call, they were going to fucking kill me. So I knew I had to just save up the money to pay for it. Yeah. I didn't hate him that much.
So you voted to keep him alive?
No, I voted to kill him. No. I only hated him $2.95 worth.
Exactly. Yeah. $2.95. Where am I going to get $2.95?
Don't you mind.
Don't you mind. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the law box? I'm sorry. One last question for Mike. Mike, can I get that on Comics, not Comixology, but can I get that on the DC app?
You can if you wait about 2 or 3 years.
Can I get it anywhere else?
You can get it digitally on Comixology, or you can go to comic book store. I'm sure they have plenty of copies because there were like 8 different covers or something crazy like that. It, according to my comic book shop guy, it is the biggest selling comic that they have had in the last 4 or 5 years.
My eyes are getting so bad that digital comics are actually my only real go-to now, sad to say. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the law box?
I have 2 books this week. 2. Because they're both related to our topic this week. I've got Superman Isn't Jewish, But I Am, Kinda, by Jimmy Beamon and Emily Boudet. And this is published by Humanoids. And it was a sort of slice of life, coming of age story about this kid in France who was Jewish but never really understood truly what it was to be Jewish. And it was just a charming little story about him coming to terms with his Jewishness. So gonna throw that one out there. And then I have another story called Mayor, about a Jewish mobster that's in an old folks home in Florida and his quest to bust out of the old folks home, but also stay under the radar of the mobsters that are trying to put a hit on him, and his adventures getting out of the old folks home. And it was a really, really nice sort of mobster story, but also it's a mobster story, but also sort of a weird, humorous action kind of story as well, published by Humanoids, by Jonathan Lang and Andrea Moody. So those
every
are
time
my
you said,
two.
Every time you said mobster, I thought you were saying lobster. I don't know why. Maybe I was nodding out. I don't know. Sorry, that's a tangent.
I mean, there was a fisherman involved called
Captain. Okay, good. And there have been some lobster superheroes like Lobster Joe. So, but that's tangential. Josh, tangents are your thing. Got a tangent for us?
Yeah. So speaking of mobsters and lobsters, we actually went out for a nice seafood dinner tonight, and Ian and Tammy had lobster, New England lobster. They both thought it was delicious. You guys, favorite seafood and favorite locales, geographic seafood. What do you got?
I like a nice shrimp po' boy down in New Orleans.
I like fried scallops in the New England area.
I don't know what kind of fish it was.
Uh-oh.
But I was at a Brazilian steakhouse in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and it was fish night, or seafood night, I should say. And holy shit, it was amazing. I think it might have been sea bass.
Sea bass is delicious.
I was in a onsen in Japan for a very traditional. It's like a 19-course meal provided by family. And they had this – they just kept translating it to butterfish. And that's really what it was. I don't know what it was either, but it was like about the size of a Frisbee, round. And it was really thin, and you were just peeling right off the ribs down, and that was the only meat on the thing. And it was so goddamn good. And fortunately, one of my brother-in-laws didn't like it at all, so I was just trading him other courses for that. I was just trying to trade anybody any other course for that course of the meal. And, wow, I would love to go back.
Butterfish.
That sounds good. Oh, it's so good. Oh, it's just like – it was crispy on the outside. Yeah, and just like buttery warm on the inside. Just like – oof, that's a good fish.
Speaking of fish, I just want to mention this. I'm a New Englander, and I thought I knew how to fish. I know how to fish a little bit. I can fish. I like fishing. I thought – like my entire childhood until about 2 years ago, I thought scrod was a fish because we'd always have it, right? Scrod plate.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I had no idea – that scrod was just, like,
meh. That's kind of what we caught today. And it could be any one of these several fish.
I always loved having scrod with the soup du jour.
I'm sorry, what's the soup du jour? It's the soup of the day? That sounds delicious. I'll take that.
See, when you said sea bass, that was the first movie I thought of, by the way, Josh, the bad guy in there. Sea bass. I thought for sure, like, if you had, like, I would have fought, I would have died on that hill. Scrod? I've had scrod. Fuck you. I've gone to restaurants and they serve me scrod, you pieces of shit. Don't tell me. I'm from New England. I know what scrod is.
It was my mom's favorite fish, by the way. Every time we went to a restaurant, if it had scrod, she's like, oh, scrod. That's my favorite.
Yep.
Yeah, I miss my mom.
I miss your mom too.
Yeah.
God damn it.
I'll tell you, Mike, I have one magnet on my refrigerator, and the only thing it's holding up is a picture of your mom.
Aw, thank you.
You know what? Usually that would sound terrible, but it's nice.
If that was Tom, that would sound terrible.
Yeah, he puts his over his bed. It's cool.
Yeah. It's a projector. It's the same thing. It was that goddamn movie you showed at her funeral, Mike. She was a very fetching young woman.
So we should mention, to get us all, not to bring us out on a downer note, that we lost a legend in the pop culture realm that nobody really talked about. We talked about Chadwick Boseman last week, but we also lost Joe Ruby, the creator of Scooby-Doo, who passed away at the age of 87. So let's just have a little drink to the creator of many hours of entertainment for us.
Yeah.
Can you also work on
Wait a minute. I actually got the guy that killed him. Hold on. Let me take his mask off. It was old age.
No. Too soon.
Too soon?
Too soon.
Pull the mask off that guy. He's just old age. All right.
I don't know if he was involved in Thunder the Barbarian or not. I know he created Jabberjaw and Dino-Mutt.
Yeah. I love Dino-Mutt.
I love Jabberjaw.
But Scooby-Doo, I mean, yeah, what's the – just the amount of raw source material and what that generated over the years is – that's an enormous body of work.
And it's still cranking them out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like someone's still going, you know what's still fresh? Scooby-Doo. Let's do this. Who's he fighting? John Cena. I don't know. Hey, fuck.
Every generation has like three Scooby-Doos at this point.
When I go into my comic book store, if there's nothing in there that I want, I know I can just go over and grab the Scooby-Doo team-up and fucking love it. And it's one of the best comics out there. I don't know why I don't subscribe to it. I guess it's just because it's my guilty pleasure. Like, all right, I'll grab this and, you know, a pack of condoms and a fifth of scotch. Yeah.
Dress shoes.
Some adult diapers. That's Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, he was a producer on Thunder the Barbarian.
You just had to be right, huh? You couldn't just
look, man. Look, he deserves a nod for that. We all love Thundar.
We do.
We do. It's true.
I love that you mentioned that, Mike, because I have a guilty pleasure, too. If I'm in a comic book store and I don't see anything else I want, I can pick up an Archie, especially the old Archies, the little square ones. I love those. Those are still pretty fucking funny to me.
Oh, my God. We have not revealed to the fans yet, but you will have to put it on Twitter, the photo of me, or holding my commissioned Dan Parent original Jughead Jones as Stilt Man.
The best thing about that for me personally was taunting Max Dunbar with it. In my ongoing feud to have Max Dunbar draw Stiltman.
I'm going to send you my Bob Layton Stiltman. And you could be like, hey, oh, you're better than Bob Layton? Because he'll draw Stiltman.
Oh, yeah.
You drew him with like extra muscles and
Bob Layton was so nice that when I was buying a headshot and he was like, I drew the whole thing because no one has ever asked me to draw Stiltman, and that includes all the Marvel editors.
Nice. They knew you were going to put pouches on the guy. Or am I thinking of Layfield?
You're thinking of Layfield.
I've been Layfield.
We don't talk about Layfield right now.
We don't talk about Layfield. I love that. That's a terrific thing. I also love how you were slightly conflicted when Dan Parent put it up on his webpage. He's like, I paid for it, but he's getting it away for free now? Damn it.
I always have that sort of feeling in my gut when you've paid for something and now the artist invariably, almost all of them, puts it on some public media. And this is the commission I just did. Yeah, I just paid for that. And now everybody got it for free. I get it. There are times where no one's ever going to pay for that and I have to do it. But still, I don't know. I'm always conflicted about that.
I'm glad he did it because the world's a better place, right, Mike?
Yeah. If he had asked, I would have said yes. In fact, a lot of times at cons when I do ask for a commission from an artist, they'll say, "Hey, do you mind if I post this when I'm done?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, go ahead."
But the problem is, I think a lot of them don't ask, especially online these days, and they just do it, and I get it. They want exposure. They want that, but it's a weird thing for me. It's just a weird thing.
Josh, you just have to commission things that they don't want to put online.
Oh, like
like
we don't talk about that. But it's the first one of my con art that's getting framed and going on the wall of my office. You betcha.
What's that?
You bet your bottom voltage that's going on the wall.
Well, that brings us to plugs.
Indeed.
Does anyone have anything good to plug?
Well, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check him out at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, Seth and the boys over at whosnextgaming.com for all your gaming and sex robot needs.
I'd like to plug our Twitter feed real quick. That's
at the Long Box Guys.
That's right, at the Long Box Guys. We've been having a great time. That's right, branding. We've been talking a lot about wrestling and comic books this week. We also talked a little bit about editorial comics, especially of the president, because that was trending a couple times this week, and we reposted a couple of those that were real fun.
I want to send you my Scott Shaw, the creator of Captain Carrot, did a commission for me. I will send it to you. You post it on our Twitter feed at the Long Box Guys so you can see it. We should also plug our Patreon page where for a mere $1 a month.
$1?
It's crazy.
Of four hand jobs in my city.
Wow, I'm going to have to come to your city more often.
By the way, can I borrow a quarter?
I'll give you 50 cents later.
Thank you.
So for a mere $1 a month, you can get our bonus podcast, The Geek Leak, every week that we do a podcast. It is all the money goes to the Elizabeth Peabody Food Bank, Elizabeth Peabody House Food Bank, excuse me, which our good friend Tom likes to cough over. Yeah.
Sorry.
So if you want to support us, you're not really supporting us. You're supporting people out there who need food. So feel good about yourself and get a bonus podcast from us.
Damn right.
I'd like to plug Josh's house guest, geekorthodox.com, folks.
GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Hello, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com prepares some fine geeky things such as stained glass prints, t-shirts, hats, socks, posters, you name it, they got it. GeekOrthodox.com, purveyors of fine geeky things.
And between the two of them, three of the finest feet you'll ever see in your life.
And now, from now to Labor Day, if you go over and use the code DragonCon2020, you can get 20% off any order over $40. Let them know that the Long Box guys sent you. It won't help you out any, but it'll let them know that, hey, people actually listen to us.
It's true.
I don't know if you heard earlier on, my mom's dead.
It's true, and we all miss her.
We do. Damn it, LT.
Wow.
God damn it. I'd like to just a quick plug out to...
No, it's good. All right.
What, maybe? All right. No, Alpha and Omega Game. Alpha and Omega Games, purveyor of such fine games as Warhammer 40K that takes all my money. I was able to play in a couple of tournaments over the week. We did talk about that on our Twitter feed. And I'm starting to play as if it's a real army, and they don't know how to handle it.
It's not a plug, but I would like to say, Netflix, fuck you. I've been going through Person of Interest at my own pace, and now you tell me it's getting pulled on September 28th. I've got 80 fucking episodes to watch before you pull it. Challenge accepted, motherfucking Netflix. You're on.
Challenge accepted.
It's on.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Well, I guess what we know what Mikey's doing this weekend.
Damn right.
Yeah, I took Friday and Monday off.
That's dedication. I respect, my friend.
Nice.
Respect. And with that, we will bid you a fond farewell and adieu. Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
This podcast is like Drunk History, but for comics.
And my good friend Josh, your house is pretty much your sector.
Well, I circled around to an old brewery that I hoped after the last 10 years would have gotten better. And I will say, Wormtown Brewing in Worcester, yeah, you're not my sector.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Ooh, but Treehouse Brewing still number one.
Treehouse still number one.
All right, Tommy, sweet Tommy, anything to say to us?
Yeah, Kentucky, get off your ass and get rid of Mitch McConnell already.
Did you get your postcards?
Those are all gone.
All right, I got mine out. And don't forget what I always say, don't diss what you hate, just promote what you love. You live a lot longer, so long from the Long Box, guys.
Love you, bye-bye.
Love you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'd like to go back and read it, but unfortunately, I'm not going to have time. I don't know if I've told you. Fucking Person of Interest is getting pulled off the air.